Hello, my name's Ross. I'm Trish's husband. I like crosswords, especially cryptic crosswords, but I've always got a crossword in my bag when I come to church, when I go and have to wait somewhere. Very useful. Cryptic crosswords remind me of Isaiah and many of the prophets. Cryptic crosswords, if you've never done one, have usually got two clues, not just one. And the meaning of the two clues combined actually gives you the answer that you need. And if you've interpreted the clues correctly, well, you usually get the right answer because you've got the right number of letters in the word that you want to put in the spaces. And so Isaiah, as he writes to the people that he was writing to in those days, and that was his focus, it wasn't us, but it was to them, as he wrote to those people in those days, was speaking on God's behalf to his audience. Some of the things he said were quite cryptic, and if you want to be able to understand how he speaks and what he's trying to tell us, then basically we have to interpret all these cryptic statements that he continues to make. And so there are a number in this passage that Tricia has read to us today. I'm supposed to be doing all of chapter 42, but I'm only doing verses 1 to 9. There's just too many cryptic clues in there. And so we'll just try and keep to these cryptic clues. And as with the normal way I speak, it's still going to be detailed anyhow. So sorry about that. Chad introduced us to Isaiah. Isaiah in chapter 6, where Isaiah himself is introduced to us as somebody who sees God and falls down in worship and recognises that he is a sinful person. He is touched on the lips with an angel, with a coal, and God's reveals this problem that he has, who will go? And Isaiah is the one who says, here am I, send me. He was prepared to be God's servant. And as Thea has already prayed, it was difficult times for him in that particular chapter. Chad pointed out to us that Isaiah would be sent to a people who weren't prepared to listen, who would be rejecting of things that he had to say. And it was going to be very difficult for him. And right at the end of that chapter, he points out that the people that Isaiah was preaching to would go away, would be destroyed, the land would be destroyed. They'd leave the land that had been promised to them, the new Eden, if you like, that God had promised to the nation that he who were his beloved. And so he would destroy it and send them out simply because they didn't keep the covenant that he made with them. And so he would send them away into captivity. And so there was a point of hope, as Jono mentioned in his sermon last week, a point of hope right at the end that out of this tree that had been chopped down would grow a shoot. And so as we come into this chapter, chapter 42, we're going to see revealed to us some more of the cryptic clues that God gave Isaiah to tell the people 70 centuries ago to look out for as they progressed. But on the whole, he was just warning them about what was going to go on. And so when Jono spoke last week, he introduced to us this whole idea that we have hope and we have comfort from God. It's more than just, oh, well, we really just wish this is going to happen, just wishful thinking. But it is a hope in a person was what he brought through with his sermon. We are living in uncertain times, as Thea prayed and as Chad has pointed out as well. We're in a similar boat to the generation that Isaiah spoke to, and potentially maybe for the same reasons. But there we are. We're in this uncertain times. And so let's see today what we can find from Isaiah 42, what God has to say to us. You'll notice that in 42 verse 1, God says through Isaiah's mouth, behold my servant. Now when he used the word behold, it means sit up and listen, because this is an important thing that I want to say. So sit up and listen, put away your cryptic crosswords. All right, to get into it. So, behold my servant, he says. So he's speaking on behalf of God. Now, it's interesting that the passage, the nine verses, split into two major sections, 1 to 4 and then 5 to 9. 1 to 4 is basically God talking about this servant that he's on about, that he wants to talk about and has an interest in. And then for the second part of the passage basically talks about God himself and the promises that God is prepared to make to his servant. So here's the first four verses, and I'll going to be using the text and talking to the text. So, behold my servant. The first thing that we notice about, as he goes to talk about his servant, whoever this servant is, God is deeply invested in him. God is deeply invested in this servant because he says this, whom I uphold. Now, notice the tense here. Like, you know, is it past tense, future tense, present tense? Here is my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. And so we've got this description that God is giving of this servant thing, person, who is of deep interest to him and whom he loves deeply. And so I've just summarised that you think about these words. This particular servant is upheld by God. He's chosen by God. He's a delight to God, and he has his spirit on him. He is empowered by God, present tense. He has these things. And so you think, this servant must be around somewhere at the moment. And so let's move on. He has a grand goal for him to achieve. He's got this worked out, that this is something that he wants this servant to achieve. And he says here, he will bring forth justice to the nations. He will bring forth justice to the nations. And if we think about that, well, I mean, this is not past tense, not present tense, it's future tense. He will. He'll bring, and you think, well, okay, he told Isaiah that. Has that happened yet? Has everything been sorted out? Has everybody vindicated for the way they've been badly damaged? Has everybody, you know, got a fair go at the moment? Well, that doesn't seem to have happened yet. And so we've got this sort of cryptic problem going on as God speaks to his Isaiah, and Isaiah speaks on his behalf, which is, well, hang on, has that happened yet? Or did it happen? Maybe we've missed it and it happened some time. And so we look at Isaiah and we think, no, I'm not sure. And so there's this question. I mean, we haven't solved the problem yet, so let's move on. So this grand goal that he is going to achieve is going to be, he will establish a fair go for everyone. Now, the second thing that God says in this section about his servant is how he will carry out his mission, how he's going to go about doing this. And this is really interesting because when you compare this with, say, Putin in Russia and China, with the way China is looking at the moment, you know, well, first of all, at Hong Kong and sort of overwhelmed it. And then Taiwan at the moment, China's sort of rattling their sabres on the edges of that country. And then Putin, Russia, Ukraine, those issues. You imagine those people, how they are feeling at the moment under the threat of this great power from the north, which was similar actually to what Judah was facing, because there was this great power from the north that was sabre-rattling at the time. And so, but this particular servant that Isaiah is talking about, he says this of him, he will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a faintly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. Future tense. This servant is going to do this in the future at some particular time. And so, I mean, look at the words that are used to describe this servant. He's not going to be some rampaging conqueror who basically influences people with the sword and smacks them around the face and all the rest of it and jails them and imprisons them in order to achieve his goals. He's going to be, in his presentation, he will be present in meekness. He will present gently. He will present faithfully. And so here's some more cryptic clues, and you think, well, hang on, who's this person? Is it a person? Is it what? Who is it? And so he, you know, God wants us to think, and Isaiah's generation, God wanted them to think because that's who was talking to primarily. Who is it? Who is this person or this servant, as he's called at the moment? Who is he? And in contrast to other people who are bruised reeds and smoking flaxes, this servant, the way he will apply to his task, he will not grow faint. He will not be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth. And there's that theme again, establishing justice. He will establish justice. He will establish justice. He'll give everybody a fair go. He'll make it right. Till he's established justice in the earth and the coastlands wait for his law. Now, the coastlands are assumedly the islands, you know, just the remotest parts of the Pacific Ocean, until they know, until they hear, until they understand. And so he will persevere steadfastly until justice is served. Whenever that is, he will persevere. And so that's the description of the servant. Now, I know you've got your masks on and all right, but here's a summary of this little bit. Jehovah's interest in his servant is upholding him, he's chosen him, he's a delight, he's empowered, he'll establish a fair go for everyone. How his servant will carry out his mission, he'll work in meekness, gentleness and faithfulness, he'll persevere steadfastly until justice is served. Talk to the person beside you. Who do you think that Isaiah is talking, or God is talking about through Isaiah? Well, who is this servant? Oh, you don't have to talk to the person beside you. That's all right. Now, be careful. This is a trick question, okay? So it's a trick question. So, but what's it look like? Anybody want to give me, you know, a response to this? What's it look like, this, who this person is? Jesus. It does look like that, doesn't it, you know? Now, I'm going to sort of give you a bit of a wild card as far as cryptic clues are concerned, because when God speaks through Isaiah in Isaiah, we only need to go back one chapter to chapter 41 and read the first bit of that, and we're going to find that God says, consider my servant Israel. And so God doesn't just talk about Jesus to these people. He's actually talking about Israel, and primarily that's who his servant is. And if, as you go through Isaiah, you'll find that Israel is described in certain ways with respect to God, but always called my servant. And he talks about his intentions for those people who still live in this world, who have never been destroyed, and who still live in this world, my servant Israel. He's got an interest in that group of people because they're his chosen and faithful servants. And so, and if we go to the end of chapter 42, we have, you know, we're doing 42 today. If we go to the end of that, you'll also find that in the end of 42, it says, my servant Israel is blind and deaf and they're hopeless, sort of thing. I mean, that's a bit of a paraphrase, but they're very upsetting to God because they basically have broken their covenant. They will not do what they promised that they would do to God in order to stay in the land. That was to worship him and not worship idols. And so here, when we look at Isaiah, we can't just say, oh, yeah, that's Jesus. But basically, they didn't understand that. I mean, they were living centuries before that, so they wouldn't have had much of a clue. And so speaking to that generation, they're looking in hope for this servant who was going to come to release them and basically resolve all the issues so everybody would get on well together and there'd be no more whatever in the world that caused problems. So there's a bit of a conundrum for you to think about. Now we come to the second part, verse 5 on, and it's now that God actually starts to speak to his servant. And I mean, this is a powerful description of God, and it's God speaking on his own behalf, and I sort of really enjoyed reading this and thinking about it. Jehovah presents himself to the listeners in that day, and also he presents himself to us. Jehovah can be interpreted to mean the covenant-keeping God. He made a covenant, he's given his word, and he's kept it with Israel, his people, and yet he's got this covenant that they haven't kept, and they've broken that covenant, and it's damaged. And so, as a result, they're going to go into captivity. But this is God speaking to these people in that day. Thus says God the Lord. Which God? Oh, this God. Okay, well, let's find out what this God is like. And he says, what is he like? You can see that he's presenting himself here as a provider and a creator. And so let's just read it. Who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it. He gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk in it. Every new little baby that's born, basically, he gives breath and that internal bit that we can't see that lives on, the soul, he gives those things to everybody. He sustains them as well. And so it's that God who's talking, the one who's still around and is still managing to keep the world operating like clockwork, regardless of what we try to do to destroy it. And so there he is, the creator of heavens and earth, natural environment, and the enliver and sustainer of human soul. So he's the God that is speaking, and he's the God that is making this promise to his servant. So we better listen up about what he's saying, and so should his servant listen up. If it's Jesus, well, so should he listen up. But it's quite an impressive portfolio there, isn't it? You know, if I walked into the room and said, oh, I created the world, did all this sort of stuff, you'd say, don't be stupid. But this is God, and he's speaking to us, his people, and those people in those days. Now note the tense again. And this is God now. He's got his hand on the Bible, you know, sort of, metaphorically, and he's swearing an oath. He's making a pledge. And so just splitting the verses up a little bit, the first thing that he makes is quite a little bit difficult, this verse. I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. Now, I want to point out one thing there. Can you see the asterisk there? You is in the singular. And so when Al said, yeah, it's Jesus, well, it's probably right. And from Isaiah, this is probably one of the most specific passages that identifies the servant talked about in this section of Isaiah as Jesus, full stop. It's only Jesus who can fulfill all of these things that God has promised, and it's only Jesus who he promises this specifically to. Mind you, in a general sense, some of it can apply to people who are his servant, but let's look at it. So the choice that he's made, I've called you in righteousness, is about, well, look, it's the right time, it's the right place, it's the right season, it's the right occasion, and it's the right decision. It's right, all over the place, because the decision I've made for whatever's going to happen to you, and I swear that this is how I will be with you as you do it, is all worked out by me, and it's all right. It's all right. And so what does he do? He promises to guide and protect his servant. I'll take you by the hand and I'll keep you, look after you, you know, and I'll guide you along the path that I want you to go on. Now, the second thing is quite powerful, and I've called it a heart-wrenching commitment. And just sort of interpreted this, the servant's life for both Jew and Gentile alike, for the nations and for Israel itself. He says, I will give you as a covenant. I will give you as a covenant for the people, with the intention of you being a light for the nations. Now, nations is plural. We're talking about everybody. All of non-Jews and Jew alike. And you know, what's his brief? To open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison, those who sit in darkness. And with that little, this commitment that God makes here, this new covenant commitment, I thought of Abraham and Isaac. You know, God tells Abraham to take Isaac up the hill and sacrifice him of all things, you know. And Isaac's sort of getting the sense of this, that he's going to be the lamb on the altar sort of thing. And he says, well, who's going to provide the lamb? And Abraham said, my son, God himself will provide a lamb for the burnt offering. That is powerful, isn't it? Because here's this covenant-making God who swears to his son, who he is talking about cryptically, that he's going to be with him, but it's going to be costly. It's going to be very costly. Now, you think about it, God can't ask any human servant. He can't ask any human servant to die for the sins of everybody else. He just can't ask that. And so this has to be a picture of Jesus and what we know in retrospect he came to do. And if you think about it, their problem was sin anyhow, wasn't it? I mean, Israel's problem was sin. And so here we have Jesus being promised to basically be the new agreement, the new covenant. I will give you as a covenant, not just for the Jews, but for everybody in the whole world. And so we have this metaphor, this picture in hundreds and hundreds of years ago that is being presented, that this is God's intention, and this is on oath on the Bible, that this is what he's going to do. And so from then on, I just got this, well, Jehovah's declaration, not of independence, but transcendence distinction. God is bigger and better than everybody, you know, like he's just amazingly beyond all of us as creation and all that he has created. And so he is transcendent. So again, the question, which God? Well, it's this God. As when he sort of was talking to Israel when they first of all came as a nation out out from Egypt in the Exodus. Who are you? He said, I am who I am. Oh, not I am plus, hey, my name is all you need to know because that describes my character. That's it. I don't need anything else to prove. I mean, not one of us can't go up and say, oh, yeah, God's a good guy. I mean, what right do we have to say that apart from in worship? And so we are not on the same plane to endorse him. Nobody is on the same plane. And interestingly, this is in contrast to God talking about the idols in the previous chapters. Jono mentioned that earlier. And so we've got this go on. So no one else is in the same league to offer this. I am the Lord, that is my name. And so in that idol context, my glory I give to no other, nor my praise to carved idols. And look, that is fair enough, I think, because if we all die and want to go to heaven, well, we don't want sin there. I mean, you'll have to have locks on your doors and all other stuff. I mean, no, we want houses without locks. And so sin will be there if unrighteousness isn't dealt with. And so we depend on Jesus to manage the unrighteousness in our life and the evil that is in our life. And so we're depending on him for that. And then he says, listen, I keep my word. He says, and he's talking to Israel at the time, and he's saying, look, I'm telling you, I do keep my word. You can see what I've already told Isaiah, and you can see that those things have happened. Remember that Jono said to us before, up to chapter 39 in Isaiah, it's in a minor key. It's all the doom and gloom. But from chapter 40 on, it's in a major key, you know? And so everything is hope, 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 what's going to happen? And comfort, comfort, comfort. His audience that he's talking to is facing getting booted out of the land, and tragically. And so they're looking at that. And he's saying, look, it's going to happen. It will happen. You'll be punished twice as much. And yet there is hope. There's a stump and there's a shoot. There's a stump and a shoot. So I keep my word, and I'm telling you there is hope for the future. And new things I now declare, before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Well, something to think about before we do communion. Who is Isaiah's audience? Now, I want to point out, look, this is actually 27 centuries ago. I mean, 2700s. Queen's 100 years old. A few people here are nearly 100 years old. Sorry. Imagine, you know, 27 reigns of the Queen. It's that long. It's that long ago where he speaks to his original audience, his generation in Judah. They were facing expulsion to Babylon. Isaiah is also speaking to the next generations, 25 generations ago. So two generations, so not generations, but 200 years down, further into the future, that is really where chapter 40 on is focused at. It's focused on the people who are going to return from Babylon with Cyrus's permission, and to come back into Judah. The beginning of that shoot. And look, they had to come back to Israel so Jesus could be born in Bethlehem. He couldn't be born in Babylon. And so God works it all out. He's got a plan and he's sticking to it, and he regardless. Now, 20 centuries ago was when Jesus was around, and Matthew was writing his observations about Jesus and what he, you know, what he wanted to summarise about Jesus. And in Matthew chapter 12 and verses 15 to 21, we have literally this passage that Isaiah said centuries and centuries earlier. Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there, and many followed him. He healed them and ordered them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. Behold my servant whom I've chosen. He will not quarrel or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smouldering wick he will not quench, until he brings justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will hope. And so it's today. It's today, 27 centuries later, and we're sitting in this room, and Isaiah is speaking to us as well. And so what do we take away? What have we learned from what we've looked at today with respect to, well, the character and works and promise of hope from the servant's God? What God said there and what he promised to his servant. In retrospect, we can look back and see what happened with his servant. We know his history. And so we can look back at that. What does that mean to me today in this room? And then the covenant-making service of Yahweh's delight. What can we learn? How can we think about that in terms of our life today? See, it's just a matter of perspective. It's where we are at the time as to what this means to us. And so Isaiah, through God, has given us this sort of information. And so what did God say? I will give you as a covenant for the people, a light for the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison, those who sit in darkness. Are we sitting in darkness? Do we need to be brought out? Well, who is the agent? Well, we already know it's Jesus. Nobody else can do it. We can't do it ourselves. We don't deserve it. We don't earn it. It's not possible. It's grace. I will give, says God. And that is heart-wrenching because it was his own son. I will give. So I'm going to finish there. For those guys of you who are listening, what's going to happen now, we're going to have a song, and then we're going to do communion together. We're just going to share some bread and some wine. And what is fascinating is that the wine as Jesus is speaking to his disciples at the Last Supper, he says, is the blood of the new covenant. And so as we take that cup today, we are recognising that the blood that he shed made the new covenant, which is sustainable because it's Jesus who sustains it. What did John O say? We're not believing in an idea, we're believing in a person. And so we have this person that we are remembering this morning, Jesus. And so if you've had a thought from what we've been talking about today, you don't have to pray it religiously in beautiful sermon prayer. You might just like to mention it and just say, well, God, I really like you because you like this, or just say something to so we can get, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. So just share. If you want to share in a very serious prayer, that's terrific as well. But, you know, if you want to have a go, and we'd love to hear some people can be part of it. So we'll take, you know, I'll come up and lead communion. We're going to have a song first, and that's where these guys will leave us after that. So we'll have a song first. Now, after communion, don't stand up, because we've got one final serious thing to do. Thank you.